Do you want your middle school girl to grow into a strong, confident, and resilient young adult? So do I. The only thing is, middle school's hard for both kids and parents. Welcome to the Raising Middle School Girls podcast. I'm Janice Scholl, and I'm just a regular parent on a mission to uncover the best tips and advice for raising middle school girls. Hey there, parents. Today, I'm talking with Louise Hajar-Diamond. Louise has been a school counselor for over 30 years, and during that time, she's worked with kids of all ages in both public and private school settings. She's also the author of Creating the Balance, Parenting Through the Middle School Years. In today's interview, we talk about picking the right middle school for your child. While the majority of parents send their kids to their zoned public school, a growing number of parents are exploring schooling options beyond that. I talk with Louise about why some kids may thrive in one environment over another, questions us parents can ask when considering a different school for our child, and how kids transition at this age to a new social environment. Welcome, Louise. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
It feels like when I was growing up, there were basically only a couple of choices for schooling options, particularly for older kids. There was basically the public school, and then there was the private, usually religious-affiliated school. But in today's world, we have so many choices for our kids for school, so much so that I think it can be a little overwhelming for parents to make decisions about what would be best for their students. So I'm really happy that we can have this conversation today. And to kick us off, can you just tell us a little bit about what type of options do parents have for middle school for their children today?
Sure. So just to give you a little bit about my background is I'm a school counselor and I've been one for 32 years. And I've worked in a public elementary school and a public middle school. And now I work in a parochial school, which we have preschool, three-year-olds, all the way to eighth grade, all on one campus. Just to give you a little bit of background about the elementary, the public elementary school feeding into the public middle school. The middle school I worked in was about 1,600 students for three grades. And we had, I would say, six or seven elementary feeder schools feed into our middle school. And what we would do is provide field trip opportunities for the students to come to our campus, and we'd have an assembly and we'd welcome them and we'd talk about the school and we'd give them a little tour. And the large majority of the kids would come to us, and we'd set them up with their schedules and we'd put them in their place, their spots, and give them their electives, which they may or may not had the opportunity to elect. Maybe it was chosen for them. That was kind of it. There is the definite fear or reality of transitioning from the small elementary school of maybe 400 or 500 kids to this enormous public middle school. And for the school that I worked in, I think I was there 6 years, I believe. We had a lot of crowd control issues. So a lot of the management was based on crowd control and not necessarily educational thinking. You know, we developed block scheduling. And the reason for that was so not 600 kids would be moving in the hallway at one time, because that was kind of scary. So we kind of tried to make it a smaller school within the larger school. I just wanted to say that, especially nowadays, education is very, very local, and there are a lot of options from state to state. So most of the urban and suburban areas have several different options. They have charter schools, which are public schools that are publicly funded, but they are exempt from, you know, significant state and local regulations and management. So they're not necessarily getting their directives from the school board and kind of a top-down management. And most of those schools require admissions process, and there's limited spots. Parents also have a volunteer commitment as well. There is no tuition. There's no fee to go there, but they do have, you know, some requirements. Whereas if you just go to the school where you're assigned to, there is no parent obligation at all. I mean, whatsoever. So there are many different types of charter schools that vary from place to place. There are many different types of private schools. Some are independently run. Some are secular. Some are all faiths. Some are a particular religion. And most of the private schools and the charter schools aren't just the middle schools, the grades 6, 7, and 8. They will be more grades, not necessarily larger than the public middle school, which is 6, 7, and 8, but there'll be more grades on the same campus. And sometimes it'll be K-8 or 6-12, depending on the private school or the charter school. There is an advantage to that because the students aren't necessarily transitioning from fifth grade, their small little area of being kind of protected and usually one teacher, and to this enormous public school, which has hundreds of students just in one grade, and having to manage changing classes and things like that. Well, magnet schools are a little bit different than charter schools. Magnet schools are public schools. In the area where I live in Florida, we have a lot of magnet schools. So these are schools that are public schools, and they are part of the school district. So they do answer to, you know, the regulations of the school board and the superintendent and all that that entails. But they have within them a themed program. Some of them are performing arts, the fine arts, world languages, engineering, science, law, STEM, you know, all these different areas. There's a lot more that are available. They do have entrance requirements, and they usually have attendance requirements, sometimes just to stay within the program. But magnet schools are kind of nice because if you have a particular interest and your child has an interest already in, you know, sixth grade, and they want to learn more about that interest, and they have usually a larger school, but it feels like a smaller school within the within the larger school. So that's what magnet schools are.
Can you give us an example, or have you seen anything that kind of, since you've worked in different types of school environments, where one type of schooling would be better for a student than another?
The most important thing is there is not a one size fits all. When it comes to finding the right school for your child, you really do have to know your child. So it depends on your child, their interests. If your child has a special need, a learning need, some of the kids have kind of restrictive social, some anxieties or things like that. So for some kids, it is better to be in the smaller school. They can feel like they're part of a community, and other kids, you know, thrive on all the sort of action and the resources that the larger schools have, because, you know, for the most part, the larger public middle schools have a lot more resources. That isn't always true, but there really isn't a one size fits all answer. I suggest that you go visit the school that you're assigned to, which is usually the public middle school based on your address. Not just go to the open house, but actually go and have a private tour to get a feel for the climate of the school and the vibe of the school, because you really don't know until you're there. And you have to remember that the open houses are presentations, and they're giving you information that they want you to hear. So I suggest going to the school, having a private tour, and getting a vibe for how the faculty is, how the students interact with each other. You want to see the school in action. You want to understand how the students get attention. How are they awarded for attention? What incentives do they have? Are the kids who get in trouble all the time the ones getting all the attention from the teachers, or are the kids who are doing the right thing getting attention. I know that seems like a subtle thing and you can't always understand that from going to a tour, but it does help to visit the classrooms, to walk in the hallways during the class change times. Do the teachers look happy? Do the students look happy? Do you see teaching and learning taking place? There's just a lot to take in. So there really isn't a right or wrong answer, and there's definitely not a one size fits all. So I highly recommend going to the school and visiting and asking questions like about sports, about extracurriculum, clubs, leadership opportunities. Does the school have counseling and mental health services available? Is there a nurse on campus? Things like that.
I think that's really helpful because it gives people the ability to really like test out the culture of a school. And I like the question of, do the teachers look happy? Does it look like an environment where teachers want to work and where students want to learn? It's hard for some of us parents who aren't teachers or counselors to know on like the academics and curriculum side what to even ask. And that is where a lot of these schools like charter versus magnet versus traditional public or private can differentiate, is that they do academics and curriculum different. Are there certain questions we should ask as parents about that when we're considering a different type of school?
Yes, I would find out about what the school considers to be the core subjects. So usually there's 4 or 5 core subjects, you know, math, social studies, science, reading, English, things like that. Some schools offer just one general language arts class, which is, you know, everything combined, your grammar, your composition, your reading, your literature, your vocabulary, all in one class. Some schools offer 2 different classes for that, reading or literature and vocabulary, and then another class for writing, grammar, and composition, things like that. Some schools allow you to test out of that extra reading class, and they don't teach reading per se, and they let you have more electives. So you want to ask about, when you're in middle school, you also want to ask if you have a student who is kind of more accelerated and is self-driven, you want to ask about dual enrollment classes. So those are classes where a middle school student has the opportunity to earn a high school credit. Usually they're in math and world language, you know, like Spanish or French or whatever. Usually they have an opportunity, if you're very accelerated in math, that you could take Algebra 1 honors and earn a high school credit, and then geometry honors and earn a high school credit. And there's pros and cons to that. You know, it takes not something for every student. And there's no shame in not doing that, because those are high school credits and they do go on your high school transcript with the grade. And, you know, if you're thinking about college, you know, that will actually be part of your college transcript. And most middle school kids are not thinking about that yet. And I'm not recommending necessarily that they do. But when you have a student who's accelerated and needs that challenge, you want to have that available for them. So some students can earn 2, 3, 4 high school credits while they're still in middle school. So if you have a student who is accelerated and in a particular subject and they want to do that, you want to ask if they have that. You also want to ask about how the students are placed in class. Is there a placement test? Do they use the standardized scores from the previous school year? You know, if you have a student who is maybe really good at reading but not so good in math, is there just one track, or could you do take the higher class for English and maybe not math? You want to even know if they offer that. Do they offer classes at different levels? Not all middle schools do that. So that would be an academic question to ask. What is the class size? What are the electives offered? Sometimes they get 1 elective, sometimes they get 2 electives, depending on the school. Is it truly an elective? Do they truly get to choose it? You know, kind of like in high school. Do the parents get involved in helping the child select their courses? So those are questions to ask. You can ask about grading. You know, what's the grading scale? Is it a 7, you know, a 93 to 100 is an A, or is it 90 to 100 is an A? Or, you know, ask about the grading. Some of the schools have a marking period that is a quarter. It's usually about 45 days. Some schools have trimesters. So you want to ask about that. Personally, I think quarters are better for middle school because it keeps you accountable more often. It's a smaller time. When you have a trimester, it doesn't come until almost the first week of December, end of November, and that's kind of, you're well into the school year by then. But quarters are kind of nice because they're usually around every 45 days. You want to ask, do you have midterms? Do you have finals? Some of the middle schools do that, especially, well, you will have it for the classes, the dual enrollment classes will have that because the kids are actually earning high school credits. So they'll have midterms and finals. I also think it's important to ask about scheduling. Is it block scheduling? So block scheduling is you don't have every single subject every single day. You might have, you know, on a Monday, you might have 4 classes. It might be extra long. The next day you have, you know, the other classes. So they rotate out the classes. So you don't have every class every day. So depending on your child, what is best for your child? Some kids don't want to sit for 100 minutes or be in the same class for 100 minutes. They might want to get up every 45 minutes or every 50 minutes and move to the next class. You also want to ask about the instructional approach. Are they lecturing all the time? Or are they more group activities or hands-on activities? Do the students have to present, stand up and present? I personally think a multi-sensory approach is best, and also a multi-assessment approach. So kids are being assessed not just by pencil and paper tests all the time. They might be assessed by a group project or a long-term project. Everything is about the right fit. You know, there's no right or wrong way to do education, I don't think. I really don't think. And I've been doing this for 32 years. I have my own kids who are in their 20s now. So there really isn't a right or wrong way. It's about knowing your child and knowing what is going to be best for him or her. It's not necessarily about this is better than this. A lot of kids are visual learners, you know. A lot of kids are audio learners or kinesthetic learners. So you kind of have to know what their learning style is and see if that particular school environment or program is going to be the best for your child.
One of the questions I have for you is, like, we know it's about fit for our individual student, but we also as parents want to make sure that it's a good school, right? Everybody wants to send their kid to a good school. Are all schools required to meet certain state curriculum requirements, or does it differ by type of school?
The short answer is no. Not all schools have the same state standards to follow. Not all schools are required to follow the same state curriculum requirements. Most private schools follow state standards if they are accredited. Some have higher standards than public schools, and some of them also include their religion standard if it's a religious school. I would personally recommend attending a school that's fully accredited because these schools have to maintain certain standards and practices to keep their accreditation. They are monitored and reviewed. They don't all necessarily have to follow the same requirements of the state if they're not a public school, but just a regular public school. But most schools want to have some kind of accreditation and they have high standards. But that is a very good question to ask as a parent and to investigate by looking at the school's website or speaking to the administrator. I will say, if I could give one suggestion, like the most important thing about a school, And I need to talk about school safety too, because that's an issue. But I had a student of mine went to my school, and then she went on to high school, and she became a National Merit Scholar, not a finalist, a National Merit Scholar. And she's in college now, and she's free ride. They're even paying her to go there. And I was talking to her mom one day, and our school was going under a lot of getting new furniture and state-of-the-art technology, everything new and beautiful and shiny. And this mom said to me something I will never forget. She said, you know, a new building is nice, a new iPad is nice, a new touch board and iPad, you know, all these state-of-the-art technology things are wonderful. But the most important thing is the teacher in that classroom. And she said to me, I would much rather have my daughter sit, now this is hyperbolic, but she said, I'd rather have her sit on a concrete slab with a pencil and a spiral notebook and have the best teacher in the world that unleashed her imagination and taught her what she needs to know and taught her and taught her how to learn. And I never forgot that, because she's absolutely right. So a lot of schools have beautiful facilities. The most important thing is the faculty. Is the faculty valued? How long has the faculty been there? Do any of the faculty have kids that went there or have gone there? What's the longevity? Do when you go on campus, are the teachers smiling? I know this sounds like a silly question, but do they like kids? You know, I've been in this field long enough, 32 years, and I have met some teachers that don't like kids. And they shouldn't be in the field, you know? So everyone has a bad day and everyone gets stressed out because it's a hard job. But I think, you know, if you could have one thing to think about is the faculty strong? You know, every once in a while, you might get one that's, you know, nothing's perfect and there is adversity and there's growth in adversity. You don't learn from everything being perfect, right? I think the single most important thing is visit the school during the school day, look at the faces of the children, the students, the teachers, see the interaction. Is it caring? Is it loving? Do people seem happy? That you can get a vibe from in a 20-minute tour. The other thing I want to bring up is security, because we live in this world, unfortunately, with school shootings and other things that happen in school that are unthinkable, but unfortunately, every once in a while, they happen. So parents should ask about security. Is there one entrance? How are visitors received? Are there security cameras around the campus? You know, is the perimeter safe? Is it fenced off? A lot of things have been improved in that area. So that's something that I do think parents do need to check out. Ask about cell phones. Are the kids allowed to have cell phones all day with them? Personally, I don't think an 11 to 14-year-old needs a cell phone all day in school. You know, find out about, you know, you can ask about, do they have books or is everything on the iPad? For some kids, they need that physical book. Or could I also get the book? Is it possible to have the iPad, but could they have a book at home?
Yeah, I think that's really helpful. And you bring up some of the stuff that, like, us parents, we know are important in today's world, because technology has changed the way kids are learning in different schools, but aren't on the forefront of our mind when we're thinking about a new school. But I do want to know how much is my kid going to be on a screen during the day, you know? And I have one student who probably would be fine being on a computer most or all of the time, and that would be their book. But another one that really does like paper and performs better when things are on paper. So that's a major factor in how our kids learn and how different they can be. I have another question, because there's a lot of parents that I have talked to that they're considering a different school, for whether it's academics or the size of the school. They just feel like something else out there is a better fit for them versus the large public school option. But they're worried about their kids starting over socially. Now, you've seen kids come out, move in and out of different schools. What have you seen with this? Is it really hard to integrate for students at this age, in the middle school age? Is it not as hard as us parents make it out to be? What do you think?
Well, sometimes it's a good thing. And I kind of joke with my fifth graders because we're on the same campus. You know, our fifth grade has recess with our sixth grade. So it's kind of like, here it is. But I kind of joke and say to the fifth graders, oh, you can go home this summer and reinvent yourself in time for middle school. You know, so I think sometimes it's a good thing to start fresh. It's also a good time and a natural fit to do it. You're sort of ending elementary school and then you're going to middle school. For the most part, it ends in fifth grade and it starts in sixth grade, but whatever grade it is, there's a change. So it's a natural change anyway. And what I have found in working in the large 1,600 student middle school is they're going to be mixed up anyway. So they're not necessarily going to be in the class with their best friend that they had maybe the previous school year. They're going to kind of, reinvent themselves socially anyway. So I think it's a natural change. You know, I mentioned to you, I'm in a Catholic school. And we get a lot of kids in sixth grade that are new. In fact, we even have more sixth, seventh, and eighth grade classes than we do the elementary grades because we get so many kids come in from public elementary schools to our school. Academically, some of them struggle because it's different. We also have a lot more subjects. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a separate reading class. We have a separate grammar and composition class, which they don't have in the public schools. Of course, we have religion as well. So that's not necessarily an issue because it's taught as an academic core subject, just like everyone takes math, everyone takes religion. You don't have to be Catholic to do it. You're not penalized in any way because you didn't know it before. That's kind of the biggest thing, like academically. For the most part, it's not a problem to start over in sixth grade, no matter where you go. If you go to a school that isn't your feeder school, your assigned feeder school, you're starting over anyway. So I would encourage parents to explore your options, look at the school, visit the school with your child. And if you're not happy with the, you know, the public assigned school for middle school, look around. There are options. Ideally, you want to start like before, you know, like maybe October, earlier in the school year, because some of the schools have deadlines or they fill up or they have more seats that they have more applicants than they have seats. So they can't take everyone. And, you know, and the other thing is, to be honest with you, private schools, they don't take everyone. So that's something too. And they can say, unlike a public school, we can't meet your child's needs. You know, they can say that. Whereas a public school, it's a free appropriate education for all. So, and if your child has special needs, you want to be upfront about that. You don't want to have your kid go to a school and meet failure and then have to leave because their needs aren't being met. So you really want, and I go into that in great detail in the book too, but you have to know your kid and really explore and research where they're going to go because you do want them to meet with success.
Yeah, I think this has been so helpful and it's given people enough to get started in what to consider. And if they do, if folks want to check out your book, learn more about choosing the right middle school and all of the other. And so where can people find you and your work?
Okay. I'm on Instagram. I have two accounts. I have at Middle School Parenting, and that's mostly for parents. It's not just for middle school. It's really from pre-K through eight, but Middle School Parenting on Instagram. And then I also have another account, School Counseling Balance, which is mostly for educators where I connect with other school counselors, School Counseling Balance. And I have a website, louisehajardiamond.com as well. And my book, Creating the Balance, Parenting Through the Middle School Years, is available on Amazon.
Wonderful. And we will have links to everything in the show notes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Louise.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Raising Middle School Girls podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more conversations with experts designed to help you support your middle school girl, please hit subscribe. You can also sign up for the newsletter at the link in the show notes to receive emails about tips and resources, upcoming events, and new podcast episodes, all designed to support you and your child.